The SBS Cycling Podcast is brought to you by Tanara.
Bonjour, bonjour, bonjour. Welcome to the SBS Cycling Podcast. And we are in Paris. There's a whole story behind why we are in Paris. But Maka, this Tour de France never stops throwing surprises at us. First of all, the view. The view we have for this podcast, which you don't see on audio, but we may enjoy it as well.
That is probably the best thing of today that has happened to us, and it's the view. And it is a good view. It's a great view. It's a marvelous view. But yes,
it's a great view.
It's a great view. But we have had we've had an interesting less than 24 hours, I guess.
Yeah, and then before we talk about this, of course, we will also in this podcast not just rant about how 24 hours can really change your vision on things, but also we will celebrate the 100th victory, a professional win for Tadej Pogacar today in Rouen. But we are so far from Rouen today. Maka, explain to us what happened in the last 24 hours for our lovely podcast.
And we'll try not to go on too much about ourselves because we are here to talk about the bike race, as you say. True. Last night we're having dinner.
It's part of the journey.
It is part of the journey. So we will tell you all. We're sitting having dinner. We drop our new esteemed colleague, Caleb Ewan, at the airport hotel as we're pulling in towards Lille. And he says, you know what? There's a restaurant there. We all agree. He says, I'll have dinner with you guys and then I'll go to my hotel.
Very keen of him.
Yeah, very, very, very good of the man. So we pull in. We go find a park. Literally, I counted no more than 10 metres from the entrance to the restaurant, and I'm sure you all probably know where this is going. We were seated less than 5 metres inside the restaurant, and just as we finished our main meal, a nice woman ran in French, explained to you that we'd been broken into, and two backpacks stolen, myself and Edo.
And personal documents.
A lot of equipment. Passports.
My Ray-Bans that we were doing video with it.
My Ray-Bans that Edo stood on yesterday, so that I'm not too upset about.
Edo being our cameraman,
the passport is the annoying one, and for Edo, our cameraman, a lot of credit cards, etc.
But we have to also highlight some positive. We had to experience the French police the best way. We had a stellar service, whether or not they were either very nice because we are Australians, also very nice because they thought we were a media that could do something bad stories on the which we wouldn't anyway.
That to them. They were good. They were really good. They were really and thorough. We had forensics come and take fingerprints and basically dust the car down, old school. I felt like I was in an episode of
NCIS or something.
100%.
But cut the story short, we arrive at the hotel at 3:40 in the morning. We've been all done. So it's been a short day, but then we also had to fix the car. And hence why we are in Paris, because we had to do your passports and Edo's passport that were stolen. So we are a little bit far from the race today. But we have been following it.
We have. And a shout out to the Australian Embassy who welcomed us. We've filled the forms out. Hopefully we have emergency passports by tomorrow. The glass will be fixed by Le O'Briens.
So all in all, all in all, we are glad to live in 2025 that we are able to do and arrange logistics as we go or as we went along. And last note on this before we talk about proper cycling, but we were hammering down the motorway with a plastic bag on the window doing 130. This is the speed limit in France. What an experience.
And it decided to pour rain on the way home at 3 o'clock in the morning.
It's all fun. It's all part of the journey. But hey, we are here to talk cycling.
We are.
And there's a certain Slovenian rider, world champion, that has just claimed his 100th win in professional cycling. Tadej Pogacar wins in Rouen. And what a win. We have a glimpse of what can happen in this Tour de France in the weeks to come. And we are salivating, Maka.
Yeah, we are. We are. And, you know, it was a very short climb at the end. There were 5 categorised climbs in total, all fairly short, Cat 3s, Cat 4s. It was the Category 3 that was set up nicely from Visma, Victor Campenaerts, and then, of course, UAE with João Almeida. And then Pog attacked. He launched. Vingegaard was the only one who could follow.
You could smell it. You knew he was coming.
You presumed he was going to go. Yeah, and there was this talk, and we talked about it with Caleb overnight, yesterday, in yesterday's pod, that he might not
want to get. When you still have the passport?
Yeah, when he may not want to get the jersey, because then he's got to wear a yellow jersey skin suit rather than his own team one that is moulded and shaped perfectly for his size. But don't you love the Pog for that? He went on the attack. But Vingegaard almost exploded. But gee, this has happened before, and Vingegaard fought back. So he is also proving that he's on form.
He's
got to
say
on
that
point.
Pog stopped. Pog stopped as well. But Vingegaard did the effort. He didn't just roll back in. He did make the effort to go back. So this is the first signal that Vingegaard is in shape.
Yeah.
We have a race in our hands. And you could almost say from just that moment now that Vingegaard has had a better preparation than last year. The Vingegaard we have this year at the Tour de France is not the Vingegaard we had last year at the Tour de France.
Yeah, well, we know he has. We know last year.
It was
the crash, obviously, at Catalunya, wasn't it? Or the Basque, that just set him back, you know, for months. It's early days, and again, they're short climbs.
Yeah.
But already what we're seeing, just small indications. So there's what we probably didn't expect, or I don't think I expected a group of six or seven or whatever it was at the finish. Yeah, I expected a bigger group, 20 or 30.
Mm-hmm.
So it's amazing what a small Category 3 climb did. And yes, it was the climbs that were prior to that that caused the big splits, and there's some big gaps that we will have to talk about, unfortunately. And most notably, Ben O'Connor was one of those.
Yeah. 100th win in a professional cycling is not exceptional. I mean, it's very good. It's not exceptional. Other riders have done it. What's exceptional with Pog is how quickly he's done it, how young he still is to reach this number of 100 professional wins.
Yeah. It's, you know, we're like a broken record when we talk about how incredible he is, because he just wins at will. He, even when he probably could afford to sit back and play conservative, he chooses not to. And that's why we love him. That's what we love him. You know, we don't want him to win by 5 minutes.
Yeah.
I'd love to see him win, but I certainly don't want him to win by minutes. I think, like most cycling and sporting fans, you want a good contest. You want a close contest. So I think thus far, that's what it's still giving us. It's going to take that into the mountains.
The beauty of it is Pogacar is not in yellow.
Yeah.
Mathieu van der Poel is keeping his yellow jersey. And only because they've got the same time. 0 second difference, but it's the number of the placement, basically, all the stages so far.
Yeah.
The comeback, and the comeback means that Mathieu van der Poel is in yellow. So plan A worked for Pogacar, because he thought he was not going to wear the yellow skin suit. He's got to wear the polka dot one because he's winning the polka dot jersey.
He's got to wear the polka dot one. That's right. So I don't think he's too phased, to be honest. I think we're more phased than him about it. We say, oh, he won't be able to wear his own skin suit. I don't think he cares.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's just, you know, he's that blasé about, or he seems so relaxed, you know.
Not blasé, relaxed.
Relaxed. He doesn't let things like that really get into his mind, and that's what makes him such a champion.
Yeah. Do you know what's scary, I think, is that you see Pogacar having fun, and he's probably the only one having fun. Everybody else, the other 183 riders are not having fun, but there's one guy that is having fun. It's Tadej Pogacar.
Yeah, he's racing like a junior who's just so excited to be out there. That's what he's like, isn't he? And that's how he races almost. He rode smart today. He waited and waited and waited. He launched the killer attack in the last climb. Yeah, he didn't drop Vingegaard in the end, but he also wasn't going to drag Vingegaard to the finish. Vingegaard, to his credit, waited for maybe half a kilometre, and then decided to roll through. By then, that group was coming back onto the wheel. So, what we're seeing is just incredible racing. Yeah.
100% agree, Maka. Let's listen to Tadej Pogacar, winner on the Tour de France on stage 4.
I think today, I hope everybody was at the limit. I tried with an attack, the second last climb, and then, Jonas followed me, and then everything came together, and João, and he did such an amazing job to lead me out until the very end, even if people were attacking. So I'm super, super happy and proud of the team today. Amazing. I'm just without words. It was such a nice victory.
Number 100. 100th victory in your career, and you do it on the Tour de France. What a symbol.
To win at the Tour is incredible. In this jersey, even more. And to have a 100 victory, it's amazing. Yeah.
This is the kind of cycling so exciting that you love, going up, going down, pacey, exciting, with a lot of rivals. This is just perfect.
Yeah, with so many good riders in the final, in such a final, you're always a bit on the edge, nervous what's going to happen. And yeah, you never know until the final. Like today, you get this adrenaline and of this pure racing, and I enjoy it. Yeah.
You're not in yellow yet, but the legs seem to be amazing.
Yeah, we will see tomorrow. Tomorrow is the real test, but even to already to win a stage in this jersey, for me it's enough, and I will just go and enjoying this race. Of course, yeah, we aim for the yellow, but we will see.
That was Tadej Pogačar, stage 4 win for the Slovenian. Stage 4, incidentally, this is the first stage he's won at the Tour de France last year was stage 4, and he ended up with 6 stages. So are we seeing a repetition of what happened, and it would be a destroying effect if he does?
Well, it's, who knows? Time will tell. I think it's too easy to sort of get caught up in either way, isn't it? But all we know is there's a TT the following stage, and then we've got Meurthe-et-Bretagne coming up. That's going to suit, based off what we've just seen today, that's going to suit the GC guys. It's not going to suit, you know, Vanderpool won there previously. Yeah. But I'm just not sure he'll be able to get the job done this time around, or the likes of Vanderpool. So already we're seeing this race shape well before they hit the big mountains.
Yeah. And at the minute, we see the 1-2 being the battle for the top spot. Mm. There's also a lot of things happening for the third spot, I would say, of the podium. If we just finish on Pogačar, big shout out to Almeida as well. The work Almeida did,
awesome.
The Portuguese rider, was incredible. And I'm not mincing my words. Incredible is a good word for what Almeida did.
Yeah. And you know, they're the jobs Almeida needs to do. Not do anything all day, but be there. And then be there at crunch time when there's 8 guys left. And he was there. You know, and that's, you're the 8th best rider in the world, but you're working for your teammate.
Yeah.
So that's the quality of Almeida, and that's what he needs to keep doing all tour. Mm. You know, be the last guy on the mountain with Vingegaard and Pog on his wheel, or two others maybe. But, you know, it's such a short-lived role that you play, but you work all day to play that small part. But it turns out to be at such a crucial point for
but
your teammate.
Today, if anything, also what we can drive from today's stage is the work from the teammates. The work that the Visma did, the work that UAE did, as you just mentioned.
Carbonates.
This was a boxing match between teams.
Yeah, it was. And probably, for me, the most impressive was Victor Carbonates, actually. Because normally I wouldn't expect him to get over in that front group, but he was actually the one causing the initial splits.
Yeah.
So it's like he's gone to another level as well. And his level was already pretty good, as we know, winning a stage last year. Yeah, he's an amazing rider. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Okay, we'll talk about the Remco Evenepoel before we take a short break, and we'll have the Aussies and a quick look at what happened for the Australians after the break in the second part of this podcast. But Remco Evenepoel, tight fall yesterday, is clearly still battling for this podium. We absolutely cannot disregard Remco Evenepoel, especially knowing the stage happening tomorrow. How do you rate Remco? The only thing I would say is for having seen him at the bus, riding, just being around, I find him just a little pessimistic.
He's a bit on edge.
He's a bit on edge. He doesn't have the spring in his step that you could think of.
Things aren't going perfectly for him. Look, so at the end of today's stage, as we speak, he sits at 58 seconds. He can turn that around tomorrow and win the TT and pull back all of that 58 and go into yellow. So, yeah.
But he lost 3 seconds today. He's still 3 seconds lost.
Yeah, it's still 3 seconds lost. He was literally just off the wheel in the in the sprint to the line. But it's a 33-kilometer individual TT. It's pretty much pan flat. You can say it suits plenty of other riders as well, but it suits him. He's the best TT-er in the world at the moment. So he's got every chance of pulling a minute, potentially, on all of his rivals, and he could have yellow within 24 hours' time. So that's where you show your real grit. your box on. Now, the time trial doesn't lie.
Yeah.
You know, form, you can't bluff your way through a TT, even if you're the world's best time trialist, you still can't bluff your way through it.
Yeah.
You, if you're going to win and put time into your rivals, you have to have the ride of your life. So he needs to have the ride of his life tomorrow. But he's, you know, it's a roller coaster. This 3-week journey is a roller coaster. Mm. And we said it at the start, we said it at the Giro. I'll keep reminding everyone and reminding myself, on the penultimate day, Simon Clark was not going to win the Giro d'Italia.
Yep.
You know, Simon Yates, Simon Yates, excuse me. So, you know, Pog is showing his form, Vingegaard is showing their form. They could crash out, they could have a mishap, they could have bad luck. You know, they're not immune to it. Yes, mm-hmm. more times than not, they don't get caught out, but they are not immune to it. So there is a lot that can unfold,
yeah.
you know, over this next, you know, 2.5 weeks of racing still.
Exactly. We're only on stage four. It is a long way to go. Okay, we take a short break and then we'll come back. We'll have a look at the performance of the Aussies today. Don't go away.
Tanara is Australia's leading alternative asset investment firm. From venture capital and private equity to public markets and credit, we proudly partner with business founders and companies to help them grow their businesses and create value for investors. Led by John Wiley, former chair of the Australian Sports Commission, our team brings deep experience and a shared passion for Australian sport and cycling.
Welcome back to the SBS Cycling Podcast. As promised on this part two of this podcast, Micah, Australian hopes and Australians a bit of a less smiling if you are a big follower of Ben O'Connor today.
Yeah.
He didn't have a good day, Ben.
No, he didn't have a good day. And I'll just preface it with the fact that Jack Haig actually had a really good day. He was just 39 yep. seconds down, sort of in the second main group on the road. So Haig had actually quite a good day. Ben O'Connor finished 43rd on the stage, but he lost 1 minute and 49 seconds.
That's a lot.
He got dropped on the penultimate climb, and they were going so hard. And obviously, if you look at the results, there were 40 riders ahead of him. So that's not a good sign. I feel for Ben because that crash has affected him
mm-hmm.
100%. Where even if he hasn't talked it up, he hasn't blamed the crash, but you know, I think he needs to be given some leeway there. He hit the deck hard.
Yeah.
And whether you like it or not, your body takes time to heal. And so some of that time is because of that crash.
Mm-hmm.
These short, punchy climbs don't suit him. You know, he's not terrible at them, but they don't suit him perfectly. The longer ones do. But again, he's got a box on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't... Ben O'Connor is the type of rider that can be 5 minutes down. He did this when he finished, fourth?
Yeah.
You know, a few years ago. He took 5 minutes in the Alps
but
and won the stage.
At this time, riders didn't really know Ben O'Connor. He wasn't as preeminent as he is now.
You're absolutely right. But he goes, and we don't want him to lose another 5, 6, 7 minutes. But if he does, he's the type of guy, he races aggressively. So he'll find himself in a move. He'll find himself up the road. So
he's done it at the Vuelta, the last Vuelta in dates.
He's done it at the Giro. He's done it, yeah, he's done it at the Tour. So he has got a box on. He's got to keep believing. And this is where the team and management actually, and they will, I know they will, Matty Heyman, Dave McPartland and Peter Weaning and so on and so forth, and then the teammates rally around him and remind him, say, mate, remember, your form's good. You hit the deck at 50 plus k's an hour
mm-hmm.
the other day. You went over the bars. You're lucky you didn't do your collarbone. You're here and we're backing you in and yeah. we're still backing you. And we're not going for personal interests just yet. So as disappointing as he'll be with that result, we're day four.
Yeah, exactly. We're still day four.
And, you know, he could lose 10 minutes too. It could go the other way. So, mm-hmm. but right now, stick to the course.
And slight segue to day five, to the time trial. In Jayco and for Australia, you've got Luke Plapp and
Durbo. Yeah.
Those are two of the best TT rider we have in Australia.
Yeah.
What can Ben learn from having teammates that are specialists in that discipline?
Yeah, well, he'll learn a lot, one, for that point that you just mentioned, but also they'll be off before him. So yeah. they'll be able to give him Yeah, and it, depending, we won't know that. We'll, well, if we calculated now, we could see the start time probably. But it wouldn't surprise me if there is a big enough gap in between. It depends how technical it is as well. If it kind of sits in the car for one of the riders, if he's got time. It's not uncommon that GC guys do that. They watch so a they rider
go,
who
they
goes...
They go for one lap.
Yeah, exactly. They go behind a rider that goes full gas. That he probably won't. But Ben's a good time trialist in his own right. So that'll be really good intel from Durbridge and of course Plappy. And they'll probably Plappy will go for it, I'd say 100%. And so he should. I don't think it'll hurt him too much, and it's not going to, hurt the role that he'll play for Ben, hopefully moving forward.
Yeah, when we look at the chances for that TT, Durbridge as well. How do you? We've been saying for so long, we'd love Durbo to have a win at the Tour de France. A TT can be something that he can put a very good strong TT and do something. Could he win a stage like this tomorrow, or is it almost too flat for him?
No, flat is probably suits him. But the problem is he's up against, and I think he'd agree, he's up against guys that are on another level. Durbridge can definitely win a stage here. He's capable of it.
But not on the TT.
Not on the TT, unfortunately. We might have said that 5, 6, 7 years ago. But, gee, the times, the speeds these guys are doing.
Yeah.
Remco, Pogge, Vingegaard, and there's a few others as well that you can put just below.
Let's remember that Remco Evenepoel, as we mentioned before, is Olympic champion and world champion of that discipline.
Yeah.
On some, and that parkour is made in for Remco, pretty much.
So I actually think if Plappy has a seamless ride tomorrow, I think he potentially has a better day than Durbridge in the TT.
Okay.
I don't think Plappy won't win it either.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd really like to see where Plappy's at in his career against the best in the world.
Now, I think also what's interesting on having a TT that is coming on stage 5 is we had a lot of crashes in the last couple of days. A lot of riders have hit the deck. I'm sure no matter how hard the time trial is tomorrow, the riders, the sprinters, for example, that have crashed, they were welcoming this TT in a way because they can take it a little easier, being earlier at the hotel, being earlier in the recovery.
It's a shorter day.
Exactly. It's a shorter day altogether. Would you agree?
Yeah. It's a more intense for a compact period of time, but that's all it is.
Yeah.
So it's a 45-minute effort, 40-minute, maybe less for the quickest. But, it's around that. There's the warm-up. Probably 2 hours in total warm-up, less than an hour at your absolute maximum, and then maybe a 30-minute roll-down or something like that.
Yeah.
It's a three-hour day maximum. There's still the prep and all that, but it's certainly, it is a slightly better day.
So when it's like this, just on the technical side or logistical side, I would say, when you are a rider that go in the first, so you're like sort of like middle of the GC ranking, you go in the middle of the starting list. When you finish, you go not at 100%, you go at like 90%. You finish, you had a crash before. Would the team send you back to the hotel after that, or do you wait in the bus and you all go on together?
Oh, no, you go.
You go?
Depending on the transfer, where you're staying, if it's close by, or which I presume it will be. No, you, as soon as you're done.
You go.
Yeah, exactly. It's not so much a selfish sport, but in that sense, in the TT,
but
every individual...
All you told me, Maka, was this is a team sport.
Yeah.
But so not on that day.
Well, it is, but you've got to get back because you've got to be good for your team leader the next day.
Yeah,
so the quicker you get your massage, the quicker you start your recovery, the better.
The better you are.
Yeah, okay. So it's all... and there's effectively... There's at least 3 masseurs. There's at least 3 mechanics. There's 3 to 4 of each nowadays, I'd imagine. So, there's almost a staff member. Well, there is a staff member per rider.
Yeah.
So that's where teams now, they can afford to do this sort of stuff. But even 20, 30 years ago when I was racing, as soon as you were done your TT, you were gone. And we didn't have the big buses either, mind you.
Yeah. and also, just on a technical point as well, you may have seen, if you saw some of the footage, that the riders, when they do the cool down after many stages, they cool down on their TT bike. Is it to get the body... sort of like used to the position because the position is very unnatural.
Yes, it's they obviously don't do anywhere near the amount of kilometres on their TT bike as they do on the roadie. But I think it was either the Tour or the Giro last year where Pog was on his TT bike in recovery at the end of day one.
Yeah.
So from the very beginning, he was on his TT bike in the recovery, which I just found really interesting.
Yeah.
And it's a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. Of course you would. But I just found it, it's the small things that you don't think about or we didn't think about 20 years ago. Whereas now just all those little things are dialed in. Activating tiny little muscles in your back that you don't activate on your road bike,
mm-hmm.
in that down position, in that profile position, you're activating small muscles in your glutes, in your hamstrings, whatever. A biomechanist and a physiotherapist will explain it better than I ever can. But, it's all those things. The muscles in your arms.
Yeah, how you rest on your
forearm. Exactly, it's just keeping them in tune with it.
And does that mean, for example, more than anything, the cooldown today is more important, or maybe yesterday, the cooldown, just to make sure that... Are they equally important?
Yeah, they're equally... It's a compounded thing, isn't it, I guess? But equally as important, absolutely. And, no doubt Pog will be doing a pretty important warm-down today. Mm-hmm. And then the warm up tomorrow everything matters. The massage, the whole lot.
Yeah, and the breakfast and everything.
Yeah, the whole lot. Goes in every minute of the day. Yep.
Okay, Maca, it's been an eventful 24 hours. So
can we just touch on one last thing?
Good. Do you know it's your podcast as well?
Well, a recap. I thought we should recap just briefly and the aftermath, I suppose, of Philipson crashing and of course Brian Cocker.
Yeah.
Who initially, by everyone, but was accused by some.
He got yellow carded, though.
He did, I thought. You can look at the vision 100 times over, I guess, and I'll look at the vision 100 times over and probably still come back with the same answer in my own head. So I think the yellow card is harsh. But what one comment I did see was that Alpecin have said it was not his fault.
Yeah.
So kudos to them.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they are angry or annoyed at him, they've probably... stayed calm at the end. We saw one of the riders abusing him as it happened or after it happened immediately. It's heat of the moment stuff. He apologised, was almost in tears apparently, directly post stage. Yeah,
100%.
Yeah, so in the end, probably the right outcome. I guess the UCI felt they had to make some decision. But I still don't like knee-jerk decisions because someone's in green or because it's a particular name. Mm-hmm. So, they need to look at that a bit more closely. The Coffee has threatened... to
legal action on all comments on social media. Negative.
I mean, is that possible in France?
Well,
is it like a stupid question, but a sort of serious one?
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe.
What if there's a million people?
Class action. I've got no idea, but that's going to keep someone very busy.
That's all. I mean, that was whether or not that was taken out of context,
most probably. Cool. Well, thank you, Maca, for stage four, and we get ready for stage five, of course, tomorrow. But before, we have Paris awaiting for us. So I think it's bistro. It's a steak frites night because we are in Paris. Maybe a tartar.
Brasserie.
Absolutely. It's brasserie time.
Sounds good. We've earned it. We've earned it.
A million times. Anyway, pat on the back.
Thank you.
And thank you, Maca. And then we'll see you for the next episode tomorrow.
The SBS Cycling Podcast was brought to you by Tanara.